Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, March 22nd. On this day in 1765, the British Parliament passes the Stamp Act, an event that precipitated unrest and political dissent in the 13 colonies. The act created a tax on virtually all printed materials, newspapers, billing notices, broadbills, and flyers, and enraged colonists who felt that they were being asked to support the British government without also having direct political representation in Parliament. The Stamp Act is considered by most historians as having contributed directly to the start of the American Revolutionary War. In 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt signs the Beer and Wine Revenue Act into law, giving the federal government the power to tax the sale of these alcoholic beverages and similar powers to the individual states. The 18th Amendment to the Constitution had outlawed the sale, production, and transportation of alcoholic beverages. Less than a year after FDR signed the Beer and Wine Revenue Act, the 21st Amendment officially ended prohibition. People raised a toast to that across America. And in 1947, President Truman signs an executive order requiring all federal employees to pledge an oath of loyalty to the United States amidst increasing signs of the spread of communism. Loyalty boards were set up within every federal department with the authority to question every employee. If their loyalty was in doubt, they could be dismissed from their jobs to protect the security of the United States. Anyone with a liberal arts education knows that well-rounded individuals bring fresh ideas and new perspectives to life. Many organizations around the country support creative and artistic pursuits through humanities organizations or forums. The Delaware Humanities Forum is one of those great organizations. Based in Wilmington, Delaware, the DHF promotes the humanities by providing an assortment of resources and programs, which include grants, educational outreach, and special projects designed to bring the public together with humanities specialists. Their network links cultural, educational, and civic institutions, focusing on issues of public interest and concern. Marilyn Whittington is the executive director of the Delaware Humanities Forum. Sierra Fisher is their program director. They help promote a variety of activities, including their speaker series, of which I'm a part. The speaker series allows guests to listen to interesting and instructive presentations on a wide range of topics, from history, anthropology, culture, and politics to folklore, literature, and many others. Marilyn and Sierra are here with us today to talk about the repertoire of programs the forum promotes. Marilyn, Sierra, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
Thank you both for being here. Tell us a little bit about the mission of the DHF. What is your specific focus, and what are the most important activities you are engaged in?
Well, I think your introduction was quite wonderful and quite descriptive, but we focus largely on the humanities, which are those fields of study that really use words to tell us who we are as human beings and where we've come from, what interests us now, and where we might be going in the future based on our behavior and our understanding of those disciplines, like history, like literature, like comparative religion.
And Marilyn, how long have you been the director there at the DHF?
I used to be proud of the number, but it's getting big these days. I'm prouder. I started in late October 2002, and I'm still the director. So I guess that's counting 14 years.
Well, quite a long time, yeah. And tell us about your major responsibilities on a daily basis, weekly basis.
Well, I have the good fortune of working with a very fine staff of four people. I am the executive director, and our work is divided into two clumps. We offer our own programs, of which Sierra has a great responsibility. And her colleague, Kristen Wilsinski, does grant making, where in her responsibility, in my oversight, we award to other not-for-profit organizations money to do their own kinds of programmings, like lectures and seminars and book discussions.
Now, I understand the DHF goes back, to the early to mid-70s. Tell us a little bit about your roots.
We are an outgrowth of the Great Society programs that were sponsored by Lyndon Johnson. We had our early beginnings in 1965, and most state humanities councils came on board somewhere between 1971 and 1976 when we were celebrating our bicentennial. We at Delaware started, our incorporation papers give us reference to 1973.
73 is kind of your official birth date. Sierra, tell us a little bit about your regular responsibilities. I know you deal with programs, but could you be a little bit more specific in terms of details?
Sure. So I oversee our in-place programs, such as our Speakers Bureau, Literature and Medicine. We have an annual lecture every October during Humanities Month. And then I'm also in charge of our special initiatives programs, one that we're wrapping up with Pulitzer Prize initiatives. And other things that come up.
Now, do you actually engage nationally or internationally renowned authors or speakers?
Yes, we do, actually, and we have coming up, we are fortunate enough to have David Hoffman coming, who won the Pulitzer Prize, and he will be discussing our relationships with Russia.
Well, you know, I did see a note on that, yes. Tell us, both of you really, tell us about what you consider to be the long-term goal of the DHF. I know a lot of things you get involved with on daily or weekly basis, but looking into the future, what are your long-term goals for the DHF?
If we follow the founding orders of our organization and the 55 other partner organizations around the nation, it's our mission to keep all of America aware of the importance of the public humanities, to keep us interested in what makes our democracy work. So we do that through the lens of those words, those writing documents, starting with our founding document and going all the way back perhaps to the Magna Carta and other documents in Greek and Roman history.
So the DHF has a strong focus on history or historical trends, historical documents, etc. Is that correct?
Yes, but we also, I would say, do current cultural affairs we also work with.
Now, my focus, being a speaker there, I've got two programs. Both of them are historically related. I've enjoyed giving programs there for the DHF, and I think my audiences have really enjoyed it around the area. The interesting thing is, if you haven't visited their website, which is DE, like David Edward, humanities.org, there is a huge range of programs that you have there. Even you have people talking about the new play on Hamilton. You've got a guy who talks about Ernest Hemingway. You've got a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And that's quite a range. The question that comes to mind for me is, how does the DHF fit in with other humanities programs sponsored by the state of Delaware or others in the area? Where do you fit in that puzzle, so to speak?
We have several different partners. Almost every historical society, small and large, engages with the work that we do, and we partner with them. We're sharing their speakers. We're joining them in the programs that they offer, and we invite them to use our speakers, including you.
So you do kind of cross-pollinate, so to speak.
We exchange.
Yeah.
We're very active that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with small organizations like the Town of Bethel, and we work with large organizations like the Delaware Historical Society or the University of Delaware or Bay Health Medical or the Christiana Healthcare. I mean, it doesn't matter your size. If you're interested in the humanities and you can pull together an audience of 5, 7, 10, or 200 people, we want to be there right with you.
And since you mentioned you do link with different groups and organizations, do you ever link up with organizations literally around the country? Archives, museums, those kinds of things?
Yes, so we are part of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Okay.
So we work with the Federation that kind of links us all together. We ourselves apply for grants from them, and that kind of makes all of our programming related to one another, so we do have this local as well as national spread.
Okay, so you do have, in effect, direct links with the NEH.
And that's
been for many years, correct?
Our beginnings, our wellspring is from the National Endowment for the Humanities, no doubt.
And, you've got such a wide range of programs, lectures, and other activities. Just tell us about some of the more interesting ones, the ones that you find more colorful, interesting. You don't have to pick out your favorites, because I know that since I'm one of them. You don't have to mention me. But just tell us about some of them that you find more fascinating.
Okay, I think we could both say literature and medicine. That is one.
And medicine.
The door.
Medicine.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about that. I'm not familiar with those programs.
Literature and medicine is a program that's relatively new in the group of programs that we offer. It's only for people who work in hospitals, and it's a reading program around works of literature, some of them old, many of them current, and we meet once a month for 6 months as a group of people, hospital workers, regardless of where they are in the hospital setting. We can have janitors and receptionists and physical therapists and surgeons and even the director of medicine sitting around the table as ordinary, common people. Reading the same piece of literature and responding to it. And the goal when it's all over with is to have a better understanding of what it's like to be a patient and what it's like to be a doctor and how the two different communities, the caregiver and the one needing care, work together to bring a sense of wellness.
Sarah,
sometimes when there's no cure.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, when did that program start?
It's about 10 years old now.
Okay.
It's a new program.
Okay.
It started with the Maine Humanities Council. You asked the question, do we share programs?
Mm-hmm.
Maine Humanities was the initiator of the program and several other state councils.
The state of Maine.
The state of Maine.
Okay.
Yes.
And just curious, we've just got less than 30 seconds. Do you interact with literally all of the different states? Or,
we do.
You do.
Absolutely.
So you have interactions really all around the country. We're about to take a brief break, but stay with us. We're doing great. We're talking with Marilyn Whittington and Sierra Fisher of the Delaware Humanities Forum.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
This is the Talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're talking with Marilyn Whittington, the Executive Director of the Delaware Humanities Forum, and Sierra Fisher, their Program Director. They have a wide variety of programs that they offer to the public and in a wide variety of activities that they are engaged in with other states around the nation. Both Sierra and Marilyn, can you tell us about any special events coming up in the next few months?
Sure. So as we briefly mentioned, we will be having David Hoffman coming to give a lecture for us on Thursday, April 13th at 7 p.m. And that is at Mitchell Hall at University of Delaware, which we are sponsoring in conjunction with the journalism program at the university.
And David Hoffman is a Pulitzer Prize winning author. Tell us a little bit about his work.
So he wrote The one he won the Pulitzer for is called The Dead Hand, and it is about the U.S.-Russian arms race. Mm. And we will also be having a book discussion on that led by Mark Bowden, who wrote Black Hawk Down, on April 19th at the Bear Library.
Excellent. How often do you have book discussion groups or special speakers of such prominence like Pulitzer Prize winners?
Sure. So actually, this all was part of our Pulitzer initiative, which was across the country. So we had for this book discussions about twice a month for 7 to 8 months.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it really just depends on what programs we have going on.
And with a Pulitzer Prize winner, I assume you get quite a lot of interest. I'm always interested in hearing about somebody who's won the Pulitzer. Do you get a lot of nationally or internationally renowned authors in your programs?
Yes. For example, Elizabeth Colbert, who also won the Pulitzer, we are fortunate enough to have come speak for us at an annual lecture.
And what was her topic?
Oh, sure. So what she actually won the Pulitzer for was her book, The Sixth Extinction.
Interesting. Tell us a little bit about your website. I know you have a lot of things on the website that our listeners can check out and learn about your programs. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, and it should actually get even more exciting because we are updating our website. So currently, as well as in the future, you will be able to see all the programs that we have offered, our calendar of events coming up, our grants, and how to go about applying for them. But we also hope on this new website to have a library of resources that individuals can use to learn more about history and culture in Delaware as well as across the world.
Now, just as a reminder, the website is www.dehumanities.org. That's O-R-G. And if you want to check out the website, there is a wide variety of things to learn there. Does the website have links to other related programs or organizations?
Currently, no. It's only linked to what we have, but we are hoping to have a broader base of just knowledge resources mm-hmm. in the future.
I know you interact with a lot of different groups and organizations. Do you have much interaction with either the History Museum or the University of Delaware? And if so, tell us a little bit about your interactions with them.
The University of Delaware is probably our most celebrated partner. Over the years, we've done almost every kind of program you can imagine. Mm. We have been the sponsor of critical thinking after a play has been performed. We have offered to provide funding for seminars on any variety of subjects, including, you know, the writings of, you know, Hemingway or... Mm-hmm. We've had Adam Gopnik speak to us. He's a New York Times writer.
Mm-hmm.
You name it. If it's in the humanities, the University of Delaware has probably been a partner with us.
I know they have a rare books and manuscripts room, and I've always wanted to go there. Have you ever checked that out?
Actually, no. You have to use that rare books and transcripts there at the University of Delaware. So, no, we've never done any program because of that very thing. It's not a sharing.
Had to physically be there. Yeah.
Physically.
Tell us a little bit about your links with the Delaware Historical Society. What have you done with them?
Over the years, we've helped them, been partners with them in producing documentaries and hosting seminars and producing books with one of their former employees and celebrated writer, Ellen Rendell.
Mm.
I forget the name of the book, but it's a wonderful collection of photographs that tell Delaware history from its very beginning. It's a beautiful, big kind of coffee table book, and we were one of the sponsors and producers of that. But we also do documentaries. Mm. Film documentaries, and we have a lending library.
Mm.
We ourselves, Delaware Humanities, and the Delaware Historical Society, has some of its own documentaries that have been produced with our funding that you can borrow or put together an organization and go see it in their facility.
Interesting. I know you have a strong link to the humanities and the arts. When I think of art, I think of local artists, and there was a guy who just passed away a few years back. I think he was in Wilmington for many years, Edward Loper. Mm-hmm. Do you know Edward Loper?
We know Edward Loper well. You're right. He passed away a few years ago, but he was one of our proud proud supporters, actually. He was very much involved with our work and a really respectable donor, but we did a documentary on him probably some years late in his life, but before he died.
I think he lived to about 95 or so.
He's an old man, 95.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, and he was active right on up until he couldn't be active.
Mm-hmm. I worked for Wilmington Trust for many years, and at one point they had, I guess they must have sponsored a series of artists or art events, and I got a signed print by Edward Loper, so I have that framed in my house right now. It's wonderful.
There are many Delawareans who own his work. He, his artistic wellspring goes all the way back to the work Progress Administration. He was one of the artists who was employed then during the Depression to collect and see art from around the nation, and he himself trained to be his own artist.
Just curious, have you ever had a program specifically with him?
We have a documentary that we've done that we can share on Edward Loper and his life.
Interesting.
It's available for anybody who wants to borrow it. It's quite suitable in libraries and small museums, and he, in his own words, tells the story.
Very
it's
interesting.
Called Edward Loper.
Excellent. I by the way, I love the print that I have. It's very, very nicely done. You mentioned some funding, especially funding links through him. What types of funding do you either get or provide through your grants? I guess both. You know, tell us a little bit about the funding with DHF.
Our funding mix is complicated, but let me try to make it simple. Our largest fund of money comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and that's true for all of the other state humanities councils. Then we have a small grant from the state of Delaware, and we have people like Ed Loper and others who, at the end of every year or sometimes in the middle of the year, they give us their own private, generous donations, and we like that. Overall, it takes about $600,000 a year to operate our agency, and that's because we are a teeny tiny state. If we were a bigger state like Maryland or Pennsylvania here where we are, we would need a few million.
Yeah, oh, sure. And then in terms of the, I know you do give out grants for certain activities. Tell us a little bit about that.
We have a grant award program, and on an annual basis as a part of our budget, we try to award or share with the state of Delaware not-for-profits about $100,000. There are individual projects. You have to write for your grant. It's reviewed by a committee, the a committee of the governing body of the Delaware Humanities Council, and they decide, after reading your application, the application, whether it's worthy for the amount that's being requested or some dollar amount in between, up to $10,000. And then there's an opportunity grant category, which is designed for ideas and interests that happen right at the moment, and that you have only 30 days because it's important in the next 30 days to get an idea or a discussion or a person in front of the public to discuss.
So more timely funding. You know, one, I guess it's your equivalent in Pennsylvania. There's a Pennsylvania Humanities Council of some sort, and I did contact them a few years back. I thought that they were, let's say, roughly equivalent to the Delaware Humanities Forum, that they would accept new speakers and things like that. Apparently, the Pennsylvania Forum or Council is not accepting and hasn't accepted new speakers in at least a few years. I don't know why that is, but I figured they'd always be accepting new speakers. But I don't know if you have any interaction with the Pennsylvania.
We do have interactions with the Pennsylvania Humanities Council, and I need to say, in defense of my colleague Lori, each council, state by state, can decide where it wants to emphasize programming. There used to be a speakers program in Pennsylvania, and over the years, their administration must have decided they could use their money differently. And that's the
only
reason.
They have a different focus.
They have a different focus.
Yeah.
Ours has been an enduring program because we're small and people love our speakers.
Now, it's interesting.
You well know.
It's interesting. I live in Pennsylvania, but I speak to groups in Delaware. I'm so close to Wilmington. I'm in, you know, for those of you who know the Delaware Valley, you know, Kennett Square and Wilmington are only about 20 minutes apart. So it's interesting that I'm a non-native, but I deal with natives, so it's actually kind of fun. But the next question that I have in terms of your interactions is, how often do you interact with really well-known, nationally or internationally known, let's say, performers, musicians, groups, artists? How often does that happen? Musical groups, that kind of thing. Do you ever?
Well, I might have to recast your question just a little bit. We are the humanities, and we would offer interaction with an actor or a performer after that actor or performer has done something. We deal more directly, and it is our mission to work with scholars and researchers and writers. And we do that at least once a year through our annual lecture.
So your focus is a little bit less on the kind of the performance side and more on the artistic, scholarly literature side.
We call it the thinking art.
That's
academic art.
Very appropriate. Do you have any interaction with some of the local venues that also sponsor the arts, like the Grand Opera House, Delaware, DuPont Playhouse, all those kinds of places around Wilmington? Is there any links between the two?
Yes. So we actually, when we have our lectures and events and whatnot, we usually go to our local venue. So we have gone, for example, to Theater N. We've had film screenings there.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about any plans you might have for new directions or future expansions, new projects, new directions for the DHF.
Well, we're really interested in expanding our literature and medicine program. Right now, it's designed to be offered in the hospital, but we have plans in place to invite the public to sit down and become a part of those discussions with us. And Sierra is planning and getting ready to launch a new program around food.
Tell us a little bit about that, Sarah.
Yeah, so what we're wanting to do is to have, with a small group, a meal that reflects a culture. And when I say culture, this is in the broadest sense of the term. For example, our first one, which will be at the beginning of May, is about Central America. However, we want to do one on hunting culture, on farming culture. So any of those broad things where we have a meal and we just kind of sit and talk in a very friendly atmosphere about different issues of the day.
Interesting. The website, again, is www.dehumanities.org. And again, for our listeners, go in there, check out all the various options. I guess if you have an interest in, what, scheduling a lecture, you can actually, can you do that through the website?
Yes, actually, please go to our website to do that, and you can easily create an account, and then you apply all online for our speakers.
Okay, and I shouldn't ask this question because it seems so obvious, but I'm assuming everyone who applies to you is based in Delaware, is that correct?
That's right. Our funding, because it's based on how many people we have in the state, we're very provincial. Our funding comes because of the people in the state of Delaware, and we try to give it right back to them because of that.
Excellent. Sierra and Marilyn, I think this was great. I thank you so much for being with us today, and it's really been a great discussion about the Delaware Humanities Forum. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, March 29th, when we'll be speaking with Tom Macaluso of Macaluso's Rare Books in Kennett Square. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.
Thank you.